On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we talk about the Rockies again. Yes, they fired their manager, Bud Black, and we have thoughts. Three teams sweep over the weekend. It's the Cardinals, the Twins, and the Blue Jays. What are they doing well? We talk about what we saw with our own two eyes in Cleveland and in Queens before running through the rest of the series from the weekend. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that spent all of Mother's Day thinking about our father, the baseball pope. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And it's the still the best story of the MLB season.
I got so many popener texts over the weekend. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Friday's podcast. Pope Leo the 14th, if you're listening to this episode of Baseball Barbacast, I'm just going to tell you right now, we will talk about the White Sox series win over the Marlins. It will be the last series we talk about today, but it will get a little bit of extra love because of the hero, the captain himself, Tim Elko.
Just the fact that the Pope has maybe read our work, you know, maybe not, probably not.
Still probably maybe. Not. But less, maybe more probably, yes, than ever before. And that's exciting.
Than ever before on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Not a lot of Pope talk. We will talk about a different changing of the guard in Colorado as the Rocks have fired their skipper, Bud Black. We'll go through the sweeps, Cardinals, Twins, Blue Jays victorious over the weekend. We'll talk about what we saw. I saw the Mets play the Cubs. You saw the Phils play the Gardos. We'll update you on the Rafael Devers soap opera and fly through the rest of the league. But let's begin in Colorado with our opener.
So, the Rockies have fired Bud Black. And you know, before they decided to fire Bud Black after winning a baseball game on Sunday to move to 7-33 to start their 2025 season, I wasn't sure where in this show we were going to talk about the Rockies, because when they lose 21-0 on Saturday, I'm like, this could be our first topic, or we could just throw this into turbo mode and pretend like this series never happened, especially after the Rockies won and avoided being swept for what I think would have been like the sixth or seventh time this season.
Raise the banner.
But then they decided to make the decision. Now, again, the other reason why I wasn't sure how much we were going to talk about the Rockies on Monday is like we just did this. We just had a really good, informative, helpful conversation with our guest on Friday, Ryan Spielborgs, about the Rockies. And we talked about Bud Black, and Spilly talked about Bud Black being it's a kind of a cliche, but he certainly qualifies a great baseball man, a great baseball mind, someone who has impacted a lot of people beyond Colorado over the course of his career.
That's what I want on my gravestone. I just wanted to say great baseball man, 1995 to, you know, 2180 or whatever I live to.
Yeah, it's a good title to aspire to. But at the same time, we know how these things work. someone's going to have to go. And once again, it was indeed the manager, Bud Black.
But someone in this case hasn't had to go. Bud Black has overseen losing seasons every year, dating back to 2019. He made the postseason in his second and third year in Colorado in 17 and 18. But since 19, it's been terrible. I would argue that most other organizations would have parted ways with Bud Black already. Now, I understand that the Rockies haven't been this catastrophic in previous seasons. They have merely been regular bad. But a lot of years of being regular bad usually necessitates a change. And so I think there were a lot of people around baseball that were skeptical that the Rockies would make a change.
Right.
That it would be like, well, they're just going to ride this out. His contract's up at the end of the year. They're going to play the string out. And so I think there was some surprise that this happened on Sunday, particularly because on Saturday, the general manager, Bill Schmidt, spoke to the media and defended Bud Black. And he did not say it overtly. There was no, I believe in Bud Black, we're going to keep him around all year. But he basically stood behind him. And it did, the headlines in Rocky World were like, well, they're going to stick with Bud Black. And then 48 hours later, he was fired. And I think to me, that is one, not surprising. Two, bad communication. Three, like, did their minds really change because I got waxed 21 zip?
I was going to say, so what, I didn't see the quotes or the timeline of those quotes and whether those came before or after they lost 21
to nothing. The game. Before
which
the game.
Which was, oh, wow. Well, that's amazing timing, right? Because the twin, by the way, I mean, so let's recap the series. So Friday, by the way, Randy Vasquez, our guy, we were like, uh-oh, this is trending in the wrong direction for Randy Vasquez, even against the poopy Rockies. If he goes into Coors Field and isn't throwing strikes, this might be ugly. No, Randy Vasquez was cooking. He goes six innings, only allows two runs, only walks one. Oh, my God. The Padres give up a bunch of runs late, but they still win 13-9. And then on Saturday, as you mentioned, so okay, so the Rockies lose the opener. And now we head into Saturday. We got Steven Kolek. Again, he's barely pitched in the big leagues. Going up against, I think it was Senzatell, or maybe Senzatell was on Friday. Anyway, it very quickly gets out of hand in a way that we have, I mean, almost historic. This was one run off of tying the largest shutout in baseball history for a team, 21-0, 24 hits. And that Steven Kolek, who has barely pitched in the big leagues, goes complete game shutout, only the 28th pitcher ever to throw a complete game shutout at Coors Field, only the 12th visiting and first since Clayton Kershaw in 2013. So that loss seems to have been that did change the Monfort's mind or Bill Schmidt's mind. But what was Bill Schmidt saying before that game?
So this is from Thomas Harding's article at MLB.com before the game. Owner Dick Monfort has not addressed the situation publicly. And there are no rumblings of major changes. For his part, Schmidt is behind manager Bud Black. Quote, Buddy's a professional. He's been in the game a long time. He knows how to handle it. It wears on him. It wears on everybody here, but he's a professional. So that quote is not, I will employ Bud Black for the rest of time. But it seems like it caught the people around the team off guard. Right?
Yeah, but you can't imagine if you have a historically embarrassing defeat where, like, that game, now they are already off to a historically terrible start, and people, we've been talking about it, but I do think that if you're thinking about public perception, I can imagine, certainly from the ownership standpoint, that pushing it over the edge, right? And this could have just been Monfort deciding, no, we do have to change something. And yeah, I would say that would maybe qualify. Now, whether that's fair or not to Bud Black, I mean, you see people responding like, this is shameful. I mean, it's sort of the same thing with Derek Shelton. How could they? Like, Bud Black deserves better. He's a great manager, and he's just, they didn't put a team, a roster that he could win with. It's like, okay, that's maybe all true, but let's not pretend like this is any sort of shock when you're this bad. I will also say, and this is partially joking, I did feel like never has it been more appropriate to relieve someone of their duty than to tell Bud Black he doesn't have to do this anymore.
Okay, this is from the Denver Post, Patrick Saunders, May 10th. General manager Bill Schmidt, who's been with the franchise for more than 25 years, is aware of the major issues. However, he still believes the Rockies can save their season and doesn't believe it's time to fire manager Bud Black.
Hmm.
So something
or not.
Or not.
Something happened. Yeah, they lost 21-0. I don't understand. Like, whoa. Did anything happen between Saturday morning and Sunday afternoon? Yeah, they went 1-1. They're 500. What's the big deal?
They're playing better ball.
Listen, I hear what you're saying. I mean, it's a bigger picture thing because this was the theme of our conversation with Spilly, which is that the Rockies don't want to change. The Rockies never want to do anything that is outside of their comfort zone. They have kept people in-house. They don't hire people from the outside. They keep people there longer than you ever could have possibly think they would stick around. That applies to Bill Schmidt. That applies to all kinds of coaches. That, by the way, ironically, applies to Clint Hurdle now finding his way back to the dugout, who is, he will now be the interim bench coach. Now, I think who they hired as interim manager manager Warren Schaefer is a much more interesting character, and we can get to him in a second. But that is the theme. I think trying to be like, oh, wow, the Rockies said they were going to, whatever, they're 7-33. Like, this is, I don't think it's, we don't have to over explain or try and think too hard about why they finally decided to fire Bud Black.
Article this morning of The Athletic by Cody Stavenhagen. He went to Denver and talked to Bill Schmidt. And one of the major critiques with the Rockies, and I tweeted something along these lines, is that they are light years behind in terms of infrastructure, that they are not up to date with their analytics department, their R&D, even their, and how they apply that to player development. And that's why the gap has gotten so much bigger. This is from the article. Adding to the dilemma, these Rockies still battle perceptions of being behind in data and player development. That's one notion that caused Schmidt to push back. Quote, we might not have the pure numbers of analysts that other people have, but we've always looked at analytics, Schmidt said. I can go back 30 years ago. I looked at a stat sheet.
Okay, so this is a good time to have a conversation about Bill Schmidt, which we have not done at any point. And I'm
because
sure
we don't know Schmidt about this guy.
Okay,
because never talks to the media, and he's only worked for the Rockies, and he clearly doesn't know enough about what he's doing. I'm not saying he's a bad baseball man, okay? But it's like the results speak for themselves, Mr. Schmidt.
No, I understand. I agree with you. But again, very basic background. Bill Schmidt's a scout. Bill Schmidt's been a scout. And you might say, okay, well, what's the big deal? Of course, people in front offices are former scouts. That is generally not totally true. Like, yes, there are scouts across the league, but if you look at the people that are the heads of baseball operations, very few of them have only been scouts. Maybe none of them, for that matter.
Like, I would say the closest is AJ Preller in San Diego.
Preller is the great, is the best example of that. Yes. Now, at the same time, Preller has been in charge of the organization for a long time. And this is also important because Bill Schmidt, who has been with the Rockies since 1999, was a scout with other teams before then. Again, like OG respected in the scouting community. If you would talk to people about Bill Schmidt before he was hired as the interim general manager in 2021, people would be like, yeah, Bill Schmidt, like, again, the Rockies, they have reputations in other parts of the baseball operations, but scouting wise, they have some good scouts, and Bill Schmidt was part of that apparatus. But when they hire him to replace Jeff Breidich, who steps down in 2021, it was like, why is he, like, he essentially just got it because he's been there a long time and he clearly has a relationship with the owner. This is not a matter, sure, he's been in baseball, but he is not qualified to run baseball operations. And that is where the disconnect really comes out here and has now been shown on the field as they are on pace to lose a bajillion games after losing 100 games 2 years in a row.
I think Jake and Jordan do a good job on this podcast. If you had us call Sunday Night Baseball, we'd be out of our depth. It's a different thing.
Totally.
Right?
Oh my gosh.
And I don't think we're qualified to do that. And Bill Schmidt, in my opinion, is not qualified to be a general manager. I think he's qualified to run a scouting department or scout.
Just go scout. Like, have me a special assistant. Go see important players. Right. That's fine. Like,
but it is,
it's not like his value on certain things are worthless, but the big picture stuff, he clearly has no evidence that he should be in charge of these things.
There is a fundamental misunderstanding from ownership down about what type of leadership and the types of people it takes to win baseball games in 2025. It is that simple to me. I'm not trying to crap on Schmidt. I'm not trying to Schmidt on Schmidt, but that's the fact of the matter. Anything else here with the Rockies?
We have to talk about,
let's talk about Warren Schaefer.
We got to talk about Warren Schaefer at least briefly, because if you thought you didn't know anything about Bill Schmidt, I imagine that yesterday was the first time that anybody had seen the name Warren Schaefer and registered it as somebody relevant or important. That's no disrespect to Warren Schaefer, but when you've been on only the major league staff for the Colorado Rockies, who have lost a combined bajillion games over the last 3 years, why would anyone necessarily know who you are? However, asked around, who is this guy? Warren Schaefer. He's 40 years old. That's honestly already probably a good sign, right? We got someone who's who's younger. And again, not trying to be ageist towards Bud Black or other people in the Rockies org, but it's like, great. Someone who knows, especially some of these players, because Warren Schaefer has managed in this Rockies organization for a while in the minors from 2015 to 2022. He's been on the major league staff since 2023. He played in the Rockies organization. So he is a Rockies lifer. And I have to imagine that is also important here. But I don't want to hold that against him.
I would like to make a proposal. If you fire a manager and the new manager is someone who already was on the big league staff, you are not allowed to say the word new voice.
I'm pushing back slightly on that in this case specifically. I agree with you. The premise that you're presenting is totally fair. We just had this conversation about Don Kelly, who'd been there for years and years, right?
Pittsburgh.
In this case, like, let's see. Like, I love that this person that nobody's ever heard of is now going to be speaking to the media every day. Like, that is compelling to me. And just to see, I'm not expecting them to start winning, but I am curious to see what if anything changes about how they operate. Again, I still expect them to be the worst team in baseball this year. And will Warren Schaefer be the long term manager? I doubt it. But I don't know. I'm at least compelled that it's someone younger. It's someone that maybe could not connect or rah-rah these players and get them to be a good team. But it's something. It's something where it's like if they had just named Hurdle the manager, I would have rolled my eyes and be like, this is hopeless.
One last thing about Bud Black. We banter about him being a quote-unquote great baseball man. But I think that is important to a point because you could see it on the faces of the Rockies players that are getting interviewed. Like Herman Marquez is crying and, you know, Kyle Freeland is emotional. These guys is the only manager they've ever known. Bud Black has had a positive impact on many, many people around the game, players, coaches, whomever. And I think that is something for him to be proud of. This problem that is the Colorado Rockies stretches beyond Bud Black. And I think that idea was best summarized by Dave Roberts, the manager of the Los Angeles Dodgers, for whom Bud Black is his mentor. Roberts worked for Black, I believe, in San Diego when they were both there. And Dave said, quote, "I'm bummed. I'm disappointed. I don't think Casey Stengel could change the outcome of that ball club. And that's not the manager's fault." This is exactly the point I made last week about Don Kelly and Derek Shelton and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Moses could not lead them to the promised land. And I am happy that Robert said this publicly because I think it gets the point across perfectly. I think that is all we have to say about the Colorado Rockies. Good for the Padres, by the way. It's funny, right? Like these teams go in to play the Rockies and fans of a team are like, oh, this is a trap series. Like, we're going to lose this series. And then they actually get to play the Rockies and they're like, whoa.
But that said, man, got to sweep it. Can't get your ass whooped on Sunday. Like, that's if you are that much better than these teams, like every loss against them is a legitimate gut punch. Because
Rocky schedule.
If you are trying to keep up with the Dodgers and I guess the Giants too. I know they're ahead of the Giants. Like you got to win every game you got against the Rockies. Now we'll see, you know, the Rockies, I guess that was their first.
I got
first,
it in front of me.
Is that their first division win, right?
For a second division win, they took one game over the Giants in a four-game set earlier on in the season. They now head to Texas, to Arizona, home against Philly for four, home against the Yankees, home against the Cubs, or excuse me, in Chicago against the Cubs, in New York against the Mets. That's their next stretch. So a lot of losses on the calendar for them.
They have lost their first 13 series, and we will see how long that streak can go. But anyway, Rockies moving on. All right, let's get to the teams that did their, I mean, took care of their business. I thought the Padres should have been in this how sweep it is category, but no, they couldn't get it done. But these three teams, the Cardinals, Twins, and Blue Jays, made it happen. How sweep it is for St. Louis, Minnesota, and Toronto. Let us begin in the Lou, where the St. Louis Cardinals have won 8 games in a row. Them and the Twins are really on kind of parallel paths of making us question what we know about them. But let's start with the Cardinals. They take all three from the Nationals. Eric Fetty goes CG on Friday, shuts them out. Eric Fetty did this against his old team, the Washington Nationals that drafted him. He goes complete game shutout, best start of his career. Cardinals win 10-0. Then on Saturday, Andre Pallante is awesome. He's one of the stranger pitchers we have in baseball. Cardinals win 4-2. And then on Sunday, Miles Michaelis, who is not a very good pitcher, but he beats a very good pitcher, Mackenzie Gore, on Sunday. They get homers from Lars Nootbaar and Nolan Arenado as the Cardinals win 6-1. They're eighth in a row. They're one game back of the Cubs. Good week to be a Cardinal.
I want to defend Miles Michaelis.
Oh, okay.
Is he a great pitcher? No. Is he horrible? No. It's fine.
I mean, but he has been in recent years.
I want to give him some credit. I want to give him some credit. So if you remember last year, we clowned on him. He had a quote about how the Dodgers were playing checkbook baseball and the Cardinals were just a bunch of Midwestern farmers doing their best. That aged poorly. I don't know if you saw, but the Dodgers won the World Series and the Cardinals were irrelevant. Yeah. And we clowned on him. And guess what? He commented on that post of us crapping on him on Instagram, making light of it. When I saw him in New York, he pulled me aside. And he was like, that was hilarious. And I said to him, I'm glad that you say weird stuff.
Like, he certainly has a sense of humor. I'm not surprised by that. So God bless him for continuing to find ways to get outs with essentially the lowest whiff rate in baseball 3 years running. But he's still doing just enough, which was a great contrast to Mackenzie Gore, who I think was leading baseball in strikeouts going into Sunday's game. But such is how things have been going for the Nationals, who are on quite a losing streak. And the Cardinals here, they have won eight in a row here. Now, I think what's really compelling about this sweep, I mean, what's going right for this team? Yes, they're beating up on some bad teams like the Nats here. Huge series coming up this week as they head to Philadelphia for a few games. But why have they kind of turned it around? We sort of warned people like, hey, this team's not that bad. You saw them get mopped by the Mets and you were like, no, the Cardinals actually aren't that bad.
They lost four in a row here and I was impressed.
Yeah. And going into this weekend, they were 4-13 on the road and 15-6 at home. Now they sweep the Nats in DC. They're, you know, now 7-13 on the road, but that is one of the more notable splits. Is there anything else that kind of stands out about their statistical profile and like why they are succeeding?
Yeah, no one really sucks. Like Jordan Walker has been struggling. Nolan Gorman's been struggling. Really, but besides that, like everyone is doing pretty good, right? I don't think they have any MVP candidates here, but they have a ton of players who are solid to good. I would say Brendan Donovan encapsulates that perfectly. He plays a lot of different positions.
He's probably above that. He's basically been their best player.
Him and Nootbaar.
Yeah, him and Nootbaar have both been excellent. You know, Donovan is racking up the hits. Nootbaar is getting on base a ton. He's got more walks and strikeouts. Victor Scott has been very quietly, right? We kind of turned our attention to Chandler Simpson among the, you know, fastest players in the league. Like, and Simpson and Scott are very good friends. And it was like, Simpson, he's the guy that we really should know because he's 2% faster than Scott. And, you know, he's going to do it as a rookie, whereas Scott had really struggled so far at the major league level. He's kind of hitting and playing good defense in center field. And he's become a really, really fun player. Mason Wynn is, you know, hasn't taken this huge step forward after a really big season last year, but he's been solid. And then Contreras is, you know, he's hitting okay. He had a cold start, but as a first baseman, he's been solid. But to your point, like they have a bunch of decent hitters. They I know this sounds stupid. They get a lot of hits. I believe they're top three in baseball and batting average, which is not, you know, if you're going to get that many hits, it probably will, you know, result in runs at some point. And they are also drawing walks, at least some of their key players. And then on the mound is where you still kind of look and you're like, how much do we buy what's going on the mound here? I mean, Fetty has a proven track record as kind of a durable mid-rotation starter. Obviously, you're not going to get shutouts from him every week, but that was a very impressive showing. I think what's most encouraging about them is some of their younger arms and the ways that they've been looking, right? Matthew Liberatore, who I believe is starting tonight against the Cardinals, against the Phillies. That's a promising one. We've kind of talked going into the season, like, what is this rotation going to look like in 2026 and beyond? And Liberatore could be a big part of that. A couple of their more anonymous relievers have looked quite solid, whether that's a Kyle Leahy. I know Gordon Graceffo is starting to look good. Shout out Villanova. Villanova staying hot there. So, you know, they had some change over in the pitching infrastructure over in St. Louis, and maybe we are starting to see some of the benefits of that. A lot of the coaching staff, I think also on the hitting side too, we've seen some changes. So maybe even though the personnel isn't that overwhelming, we're kind of starting to see a lot of it come together and have a nice little streak here.
Let's move on to another team that is bouncing back in a somewhat perplexing way. The Minnesota Twins sweeping the San Francisco Giants at home. Chris Paddock, sensational in game one. Game two, another nail biter. Trevor Larnach going deep off of Giants starter Logan Webb. Joe Ryan, sensational for the Twinkies. And in game three, this was a messy one. I was locked into this one. Twins winning 7-6 in 10 innings. Deshaun Kiersey with a laced, it was like a walk. I love it when it's a walk-off single, but like we all know it was a double. You know what I mean? Because like the guy touches home before he gets to second. He walk-off knock. That's 8 in a row for the Twins. What are they doing well? They're pitching well. Their offense in May remains pretty mid. If you go by WRC Plus, they are 16th in baseball this month. They are also 16th in runs. They are
probably better than they were in April, though.
Better than they were in April. They're 15th in homers. Like their offense, this team right now does not bang. Yeah. Right? Definitively does not bang.
No.
However, and we got an email about this, I think, recently. What is the pitching version of bang? They can chuck it.
Can chuck it. And that was what we thought we would kind of be relying on if this team was going to be good. That's what all the projection systems adored about this team, was the Joe Ryans and the Pablo Lopez's and Bailey Ober, that's a good starting pitcher. And then the bullpen projected extremely well because you have a guy like Duran and you have Griffin Jacks, who, don't be fooled by Griffin Jacks' 6 ERA. I mean, he's allowed some hard hit balls, but the underlying stuff says that Griffin Jacks is doing just fine. He's still missing a lot of bats, and I and Varland has been really solid. Danny Coulomb still has a 0 ERA. He's been kind of a sneaky. I mean, we laughed at their offseason, justifiably so. But Danny Coulomb, Ty France, and Harrison Bader, they've all been pretty good. You know, I mean, again, that's not that you can't say like that was plan A, like the Twins, they outsmarted everyone by only getting those three cheap players and all they've been. But like at least they've been good instead of teams that spend no money and the two player like the Pirates and sometimes the Mariners, where it's like the only players you got also suck. Like at least they identified some cheap players that can help them.
Yeah, sure. Sure. I think there's an element of that. That's like, there's an element of that to me that's like circling C on an exam for every answer, and you're going to get some right. Like, it's not as if they went out and got these guys right at the beginning of the winter. If they had, like, on November 29th, signed Bader and France and Coulomb, I'd be like, you're right. But that's just what was left when they decided to open up the piggy bank on February 5th. And so I'm less, they deserve some credit, but I'm less willing to give them that credit because it was more about, like, picking up the scraps at the end of the offseason. That's just my two cents on it. Buxton has been really good for them recently, which is encouraging. He's playing. That is the most important thing. I still am not sure how much to believe in a team that is being led in baseball wins above replacement by Harrison Bader in 2025. That is not hate towards Harrison Bader. Harrison Bader would probably be the first person to tell you, like, I shouldn't be leading a team in war. It's awesome that he's been playing this well, but I need to see a little bit more from the Twins hitters before I am buying all in to what they are. They head to Baltimore this week and then go to Milwaukee for a fascinating set.
Right. So they swept the Orioles at home last week. I mean, again, the most promising thing about the Twins, who are now above 500, is that like Carlos Correa has been awful, right? And some of these players that they thought were going to be good have been bad. And so if you're projecting forward that you're going to start getting an all-star version of Carlos Correa, now maybe the offense starts to look decent. But I still need a little bit more time.
Blue Jays sweep the Mariners. Ooh. In Seattle. Ooh. First time the Jays have swept the M's in the PNW since 1991.
Is that true? That's wild, because in my head, this has happened many times. But I'm going to trust that fact you just gave is...
No, because the Mariners always walk off on Sunday in the cream uniforms.
That's true. They do. And I thought, I was like, oh, well, you know, they lost the first two. I was like, they'll find some stupid way to win on Sunday. But no, the Blue Jays, in fact, put it on them even more on Sunday. They win 6-3 on Friday and Saturday, as we got some good Kevin Gausman. We got Bowden Francis looked pretty good. Bo Bichette hit another home run. Addison Barger was really kind of the story of the weekend. I'll talk about him in a second. And then, I mean, you know, things are not going well for Seattle when Bryce Miller loses to the Jose Urania, Eric Lauer piggyback as the Blue Jays win 9-1 on Sunday. 9 runs, a season high for Toronto, who are still there, still the only team not to score double digits this season. So that kind of speaks to just how stuck in the mud their offense has been at times. And so to see them even have this amount of offensive success over this stretch. Remember, this is a team that was coming off a series loss at the Angels last week. They had rallied to win, to kind of salvage that and not get swept, but they roll into Seattle here and rattle off 3 wins in fairly impressive fashion. I would say that the two things that I took away from this Blue Jays weekend was Addison Barger is an interesting character. We know the Blue Jays kind of, you know, the position players that you've heard of, right? We know about Vlad. We know about Bo. Springer was off to a good start. But they had kind of this second level of younger hitters. And we were like, what are we going to get from those guys? Because, I mean, and my guy, Alan Roden, he ended up being pretty disappointing and got sent down. You know, what are you going to get from guys like Barger, who I think were in AAA? And Barger is someone who really kind of jumped onto the map in the last couple of years as someone who, wasn't a high draft pick, but was starting to put up big numbers in the minors. He has huge tools. He's got crazy raw power. He's got a crazy arm, and it just wasn't really translating into production. Now he's hitting the ball with like top 5 average exit velo in baseball, and the approach still isn't awesome. But like, if he can give you that level of spark for a team that desperately needs power, right? Because Santander still hasn't really been giving it to them. I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, there's that whole second level of hitters, right? That's Roden, Ernie Clement, Nathan Lucas, Will Wagner. Yeah. Barger, Davis Schneider.
He got sent down. He was bad. Now they've got
that whole group has not really done anything of like that's Leo Jimenez too is kind of in that group with them.
Yeah, I mean
he hasn't been up yet this year. But that wave of position players needs to be something for the Blue Jays to be good, and it's a different type of dynamic of prospects coming up to the big leagues. Like usually when you think about, oh, prospects are going to help this team, it's Andrew Painter throwing 100 miles an hour, or it's, you know, Ronald Acuna coming up and being the best player in baseball. The Jays have a different situation where it's like the depth needs to come up and be good. They don't have any head turning all-star level prospects that are coming up in the short term.
Right. But
Barger, if he can just be like an average big leaguer, that is significant for a team that needs players like that.
Yeah, I would say Aurelvis Martinez is another one where it's like, has that kind of power? Is the approach going to sustain? But they need that because Andrés Giménez has been awful offensively since the first week of the season. Kirk's still kind of trying to get going. He had a nice weekend. And I can't believe how much they've gotten out of Miles Straw. My goodness. He has been, again, he was kind of a punchline over the offseason, but he has been shockingly useful.
No Kirk slander. Kirk has actually been pretty sick the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, he's picking it up. Still slugging.
He's been hitting that baseball. He's been hitting that baseball hard.
Actually, 312 OBP is more concerning than 370 slug for Kirk, but
that is very true.
He is hitting it a little bit better. And then on the mound, I would just say that like they have other relievers besides Jeff Hoffman that are actually kind of nasty. Brendan Little, I believe, has like the highest whiff rate in baseball, just straight up. He is a lefty with a gnarly curveball, a good fastball. Mason Fluharty is another lefty who has been very solid. I mean, Jimmy Garcia has been a good reliever, so that's not as much of a surprise, but he's been great. Finally starting to see Yariel Rodriguez be like pretty useful, which is kind of refreshing because he looked like kind of a disappointment last year. So yeah, it's still a thin pitching staff, but I think that this bullpen in particular is starting to yeah. impress me in a way that it's not just a one-man show.
My biggest concerns for this team, despite the awesome weekend, remain back of the pitching rotation, Bowden Francis, like, is he good enough to be a four starter? Easton Lucas is the five. Like, that's not enough. And then at the bottom of the lineup, it's kind of that same dynamic, right? It's, is there enough here, even if Barger is a good enough player? Anything else before we take a break?
No, I think we're done. We're done with the sweeps. We will take a break. When we return, we'll talk about what we saw with our own two eyes. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast, where I need to apologize for mispronouncing Bowden Francis's name. I called him Bowden. That's like
brutal.
I'm going to go run a lap.
That's tough.
It hurts.
No more Blue Jays chat. Let's talk about what we saw this weekend. You attended, I believe, all three games between the Cubs and the Mets. I saw a little Phillies and Guardians. Didn't see all three games, but I was around those two teams, and so I have a few thoughts there, but I'll let you start because yeah. I think Cubs Mets was, you know, arguably one of the bigger series of the weekend. So what did you take away from that one?
Did not stay on Friday for that one with Clay Holmes being awesome. That was really the story there. He was great. Mets scored a bunch of runs. Game two, I went as a fan and sat in the upper deck with my wife.
Oh, it was we got a wife showing. How about that? Okay.
First game in, I think, 2 years for the wife. The wife is not a baseball person.
But she needed to be there for Cade Horton's major league debut.
Yes. So she was all in on Cade Horton's MLB debut. And that's she said to me, like, look, haven't been to a game in a while. Watched him in Oklahoma. Excited to see what he can do in his debut. She was disappointed that they went with the opener.
Right. I was going to say, right. I have to imagine she had some thoughts about that. I was thrown off by that, too. I think I said on Friday's show, like, Cade Horton's going to start on Saturday. And then I'm sure a lot of people listen like, this idiot.
Yeah. But that was a great game. Brett Beatty going deep twice for the Mets. Cubs hang on to win 6-5. We left in the eighth. We left in the eighth, which is fine.
Nice.
Watching a game as a fan every once in a while for our eyes are too close to the screen is really helpful.
Totally.
I think that one of my takes was if every game was 11-10, that would be fine with me. I think it would get exhausting and our jobs would be really annoying and it would be tiring and none of the players want that. But like we're up in the upper deck with, you know, like 70 French exchange students. And it's like, what are they want to see that ball go over that fence, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Mets, I feel like you got to win the two Brett Beatty homer game. That feels like a game that we got to win there. but hey, credit to the Cubs. They hang on. And then the Mets right back at it on Sunday because the Mets have generally been winning a lot of baseball games as Griffin Canning continues to cook inexplicably. Good for him. PCA hits his, 10th homer of the season? Oh, my goodness. But Francisco Lindor is better than PCA. No doubt about that. And he homers late and the Mets take the series.
I've been at a bunch of the Griffin Canning starts this year, and it's so funny because after every start, he like does the scrum, and people are like, "What's different?" And he's like, "I just feel good." And like you're still, and then like the next start, I'll be like, "You're still good, Griffin Canning," and Griffin Canning will be like, "Yeah, still good." That's the thing about Griffin Canning, right? This guy was a first round pick. Like he has high expectations for himself. He's not like, "I can't believe this is my life. I'm so happy to be here."
And like. He had a good season 2 years ago. 2 years ago, he had a 4.32, struck out 139 in 127 innings. But last year was so bad that we were just like, well, he's doomed to never be a good starting pitcher ever again. And it turns out he's actually pretty, pretty solid.
PCA is unbelievable.
Yeah.
People got really mad at me on the internet machine for tweeting that he almost caught a 0% catch probability ball. I think that was just Mets fans with a little bit of PCA.
Yeah, right there. Which is fine.
Which is fine. Totally legitimate. Maybe it's a stupid thing to say he didn't catch the ball that people didn't, that the numbers say he wouldn't catch. I just thought it was an impressive thing that displays how much ground he can cover in the outfield. That's all I was trying to say. He's an electrifying player to watch. Really, just so much fun to watch. If the Cubs are coming to your city, get some tickets. Go watch Pete Crow Armstrong. Also, I got to ask Craig Counsell about the Pope, which was a highlight of my season. Craig Counsell, Catholic, went to Notre Dame. Now the manager of the Cubs. In the scrum, people asked about the Pope. I said, is your faith rattled knowing that the Pope is a White Sox fan? He made a great point. He said, look, I have a bigger issue with the fact that my alma mater, Notre Dame, couldn't get the Chicago Catholic who became the Pope into school, and he had to go all the way to Villanova.
That's way worse. That's like the worst possible version of like, yeah, you know, we didn't even recruit that kid. And he ended up going to our rival and kicking our ass for 3 years and then becoming a big leaguer. Like, you hear stories like that all the time where it's like a kid who's from, you know, a school right in the school's backyard. And it's
right.
Like, why didn't they recruit you? And they're like, I don't know.
It's like Caitlin Clark was like, UConn didn't call me back. Right. It's like.
Yeah, but it would have been, it's more of if like Caitlin Clark had gone to UConn and Iowa hadn't called her, you know, like,
right.
If you're Notre Dame and you're not getting the top tier Chicago Catholics, like, what's the point?
What do you miss? You need to, it's like how the Dodgers injuries, like they're doing like an internal audit. Like, what do we miss? How do we miss this? Right. It's literally the Pope.
Yeah.
First American Pope in your backyard. You missed him.
Yeah.
Great point by counsel.
Tough scene. Anyway,
what do you see?
I saw the Phillies and the Guardians. This was a nice little, and Guardians have been playing really well. And it was like, all right, Phillies are also starting to play really well. And this is a team that you kind of have to like actually beat. You can't kind of just finagle your way into a W. But then on Friday, it was like, all right, guards staying hot. They're heading right back to the top of the division. And back for a deep playoff run. They dominate. Gavin Williams was fantastic. Again, Gavin Williams, the talent is so obvious. The strikes were not totally there, but the stuff was there. Nola, a bit of a step back. It wasn't awful, but, you know, the Phillies offense sometimes is just asleep. I mean, that generally happens. But they have been swinging it really well over the last couple of weeks, so it was a little bit surprising to see them get shut out. Then on Saturday is the game I was at the most. Just a dandy of a pitcher's duel between Tanner Bibee and Ranger Suarez. Great to see Ranger looked awesome, and he did not look that good in his first start of the season last week, but he was excellent. Seven shutout, I believe, for Ranger. And Bibee allowed one run, but he also looked great, and Bibee continues to be kind of a rock for that Guardians rotation. And then Phillies just blew it open late. Bryce finally kind of breaking out of something of a mini slump. He homers off Joey Cantillo. They win 7-1. And then Sunday Night Baseball in Cleveland, kind of a unusual sight as Zach Wheeler just puts it on him in Zach Wheeler fashion. I think he went 7 scoreless. And then it was the Kyle Schwarber show. Schwarber, who I believe now has, I think he still has the longest active on base streak in baseball. And he just looks as good as ever. He is homering off righties. He's homering off lefties. One thing that I did not totally realize that I guess had happened in the last couple of weeks is the lineup change for the Phillies. You know, we'd grown used to Schwarber being at the top of the lineup in the leadoff spot, but that is no longer the case. He's now hitting behind Bryce Harper. So we're seeing a Stott, Trey, Bryce, Schwarber top of the lineup, which has generally been working pretty well. So interesting to see that kind of new look-ish lineup for the Phillies, and whatever they're doing, obviously it's working pretty well. So the Philly stars really showed up, at least in those last couple games, and that's what they have. That's why you pay the famous players a lot of money. You can have games like that.
I have no other thoughts.
There you go. Phillies again. Phillies Cardinals this week. Let's see.
Might drive down for that.
Humble those Cardinals. That should be.
What do you think?
An interesting little series.
Is that worth the 2-hour drive for me? Go see one of those.
I don't know. Email us, baseballbarbecast@gmail.com. Jake will probably already decided by the time you hear this and email us.
Chances are I'm already there.
Two more series before we take a break. Let's get a little update. Yeah.
I need a dramatic. I got it. Previously on Rafael Devers. I want like a Spanish language telenovela soap opera intro for Rafi Devers. Rafi, okay. We need you to play first. I won't play first. I can't play first.
Where we last left off, Rafael Devers, at the conclusion of their series last week, was like, yo, I ain't doing this. You can't make me play for this. This is ridiculous. Okay, we talked about it. We're not going to recap the whole thing. But the point is, as the Red Sox flew to Kansas City, it was like, okay, doesn't sound like Rafael Devers wants to play first base, even though they need a first baseman. Okay, we understand all the sides here. That's interesting.
The previous episode ended with the Red Sox boarding their team plane to Kansas City. Silence swaths the seating area as the club jets to the Midwest. Dramatic music plays. And behind that plane is another plane. Camera pans out. And it's owner John Henry making his way to Kauffman Stadium for a sit down with Rafael Devers and GM Craig Breslow to say, you guys need to get along. Please get along. Please, please get along.
And so, right, we have reports that owner John Henry and Craig Breslow and Alex Cora in some combination, although it seems like John Henry was kind of the major character involved.
Liverpool already won the league. He had time.
That's true. He was chilling. They're like, we had a productive conversation. That was kind of the terminology that was kind of the PR that was coming out after it's clear that they have made this meeting. However, Alex Cora is still like, yeah, no, he's going to keep DHing. We will continue to have conversations. All right, we'll see. He's my DH. And how does Rafael Devers respond? Not by playing first base in Kansas City, but by hitting the absolute bejesus out of the baseball. As he goes
7 for 12, I believe.
Yeah, he had a four-hit game. He had a 440-foot home run. And after each game, they're like, hey, Rafi, any update? And he's like, nope. I'm breaking. That's what matters.
Crushing the baseball.
Designate me to hit and I'll hit. That's what will happen. The Red Sox win this series. They do lose a tough one on Friday in extras as the Royals squeeze out a walk-off from Freddie Fermin in the 12th. Red Sox went 0-for-12 with runners in scoring position. But then, good news, Boston, you got Garrett Crochet on your team. As he looks like Garrett Crochet, he dominates a Royals offense that is obviously still not very good, even as they've been winning a ton of games recently. And Devers has the 4-8 game. The Red Sox win 10-1. And then on Sunday, much more needed from Lucas Giolito, who, of course, got demolished by the Brett Boone-led Texas Rangers last week. Huge bounce back for Lucas, who pitches into the 7th, throws a bunch of sliders, which he was not doing at all in his first couple starts, even some curveballs. Fastball was good. Command was good. Him and Carlos Narvaez were slicing and dicing up these Royals bats. And Rafi hits another huge homer, and the Red Sox win 3-1 to take the series from Kansas City, who, of course, had been the hottest team in baseball going into the weekend. So, again, Rafi's not commented on the meeting with John Henry, where that's going. Red Sox are going to Detroit this week. That's another kind of high-profile series that I'm compelled by. But, yeah, man, I mean, I guess Devers might just do it where it's like, well, if I'm the best DH in baseball, what are they going to tell me to stop doing that? I don't know where this is going, but I am certainly, the story is not over. And that part compels me on its own.
I think Rafael Devers will play first base this season. Yeah. At some point.
What would you guess? I think I agree with you, but when do you think we would see that?
I think it'll be at some point in June or July. Here is how this will go. Okay, here is my prediction. What's the opposite of previously on? Next week on. There you go. Thank you. Next week on Rafael Devers. He will drag his feet for another little bit. because he can and because he feels like he has an understandable level of pride here, right? He will then say, I'm open to playing first base. I would like to get some practice there before games. He will then have like a 2 to 3 week process of taking grounders at first and working with coaches on it. And during that process, the conversation will be, Rafi, are you ready? Rafi, are you ready? And he will be like, I'm not ready. And then eventually at some point he will mix in at first, and then he will become the first. He will be the opening day first baseman next year and play first base for like the next 9 years.
Oh, okay. Like that's all right. Yeah. We really expanded that prediction. So now we're probably shipping Tristan Casas out, or he's DHing or something. I think what I want to see is the Devers first base, Roman Anthony major league debut DH in the same game. That's what I need. That is the ultimate vibe shift.
Sure, it won't happen though, because I think teams are generally reluctant to DH guys in their first big league game because it is a very different experience than they are used to. So I would say Roman Anthony, right field, Willy Abreu, DH day.
Okay, there you go. That's fine. Willy Abreu, another homer over the weekend. He had kind of been kind of cold, so nice to see him have a big game there. One more series before we take a break. The Dodgers. Come on, what are we going to put the Dodgers in turbo mode? Maybe some week we will put the Dodgers into turbo mode, but it's not happening quite yet. As they play a 4-game series in the desert, and I mean, credit to the Snakes for coming out with 2 wins here. They went on Thursday as Brandon Pfaadt outduels Yoshinobu Yamamoto. This was the first time this season that Yamamoto and Sasaki did not pitch on Friday and Saturday. They went on Thursday and Friday. Did that have to do with what happened on Thursday? Who knows? But the point is neither of them were very good. Yamamoto in particular, his command was basically the worst it's been all season. He wasn't awful, but Pfaadt was fantastic. Ohtani homers in the 9th against Kevin Ginkle, but the Snakes hang on to win. Why is it relevant that Ohtani homers against Kevin Ginkle on Thursday? Well, that's because on Friday, I'm really glossing over what was just one of the most ridiculous games of the season. But yeah, we can zoom all the way to the grand conclusion, the climax, where the Dodgers have rallied back after they have given up a billion runs to the Snakes because Roki Sasaki had 0 strikeouts and was getting pummeled. And Kevin Ginkle's on the mound, and he's slowly blowing the lead. And here comes Shohei Ohtani, and it's like, well, we can't have Kevin Ginkle face Shohei Ohtani again.
It was not that. It was, we cannot have Kevin Ginkle face anybody anymore because he went okay, single, double, double, well, single, it was, strikeout,
so
I'm hit sure by
pitch. It had something to do with it. Now, that said, is Ryan Thompson the best option?
No.
Maybe. But is the pitch Ryan Thompson threw to Shohei Ohtani the best option? Definitely not. And once again, we've said this before, it's so great because Shohei comes up in these spots and he just nods to the catcher and he nods to the umpire and he says, all right, it's my turn to play superhero. Thank you very much.
And then his face is just like,
he's just, yep. Oh, and kaboom. There it goes. Very big bat flip from Shohei Ohtani. Probably a 98th percentile bat flip for Shohei Ohtani, I would say. Was he mocking Lourdes Gurriel Jr. for his celebration from earlier? Maybe. No. Maybe not.
My guess is that Shohei was just like taking batting practice when that happened.
I agree. That's a good point. Probably didn't even see it. But of course, people wanted to be like, ooh, Shohei, so spicy. Whatever, whether he was doing it or not, it was a great moment and a great home run. And the Dodgers win 14-11. They go into Saturday and it's like, Corbin Burnes, what's his deal? He's been bad. He's been hurt. What's going on? And then Corbin Burnes is like, guys, relax. I'm still Corbin Burnes. Best start of the season. 7 shutout innings. Hopefully his shoulder is okay. Good for you, Corbin Burnes. Very impressive stuff. Gino hits his 12th homer of the season. Snakes win 3-0. Sunday. I don't think we've talked enough about Freddie Freeman. I'll say it. He's having the season that I thought he was going to have last year. Now, I know that he finished the year as one of the most important characters, as we know, what happened in the World Series. And I know that he had some injuries. Of course, he was dealing with some very serious off-the-field stuff with the health of his son. So this is, I mean, there's a million reasons that are totally valid that he did not have a monster regular season last year. But I picked Freddie Freeman to win MVP last season because I was like, he is trending towards this kind of perfect, like one of those perfect hitters, like just kind of the, it felt like we were building towards this. Not that he, I mean, I know he had won an MVP before, but it was in the shortened season. And it was like, okay, is this going to be the true Freddie Freeman season where it all kind of comes together? And I know he had some injuries to start this year, but the version we're watching of him right now is just next level locked in. He has the second highest OPS in baseball behind Aaron Judge. He doesn't quite qualify because he's missed some time, but he looks unbelievable. Four hits on Sunday.
He's 35, and he has the highest average exit velocity of his career. He has never hit the ball this hard in his life. And it has not come at the cost of swing decisions or
striking out more.
He's not striking. No. He's just hitting the ball harder. And one of my favorite things about Freddie is that his bat speed is not very good. Like he does. Yeah. We have all this data now. He does not swing the bat that hard. But I would imagine that he has some of the biggest discrepancy between bat speed and exit velocity. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's just because he squares it up all the dang time.
Yeah.
What a hitter. So what a player.
He's unbelievable. Very, very, very special. Very, very, very special hitter. And yeah, that's a pretty good guy to have in the lineup.
So
especially when you also have Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani.
The Dodgers just went on a 3-city road trip and they are now home for 3 series in a row. I believe they have the A's, the Angels, and the Diamondbacks coming into town. When I saw them in Miami, they were already kind of like, all right, time to go home. 3-city road trips can get on a team. And
oh yeah.
Like if the Dodgers had just gone in Arizona fresh, they probably take one of the other games. You know what I mean? But when it's at the end of a 3-city road trip, there definitely is some impact there. Let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we'll throw the rest of the CRI into turbo mode. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's go. Turbo mode.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
Let's go fast. Let's go fast. We have 7 series remaining, and we are going to go in no particular order. Here we go. We begin in Detroit, where the Texas Rangers take 2 of 3 over the Detroit Tigers, slowing down those Tigers. The Tigers won again on Friday as Tarek Skubal got 32 swings and misses. Oh my goodness. He's pretty good. But on Saturday, the Rangers hit a bunch of home runs against Jack Flaherty, 4 to be exact, as they go on to win 10-3. Evan Carter getting a home run. Jacob DeGrom strikes out a season high 10. On Sunday, Nathan Eovaldi was marvelous. 7 shutout innings. Josh Young hits a home run playing against his brother. The Mama Young was in attendance on Mother's Day as the Rangers win 6-1 and win the series.
With a split jersey. Nothing like a split jersey. Shouts out to Mama Kelsey. Orioles over the Angels. Thank Pope, because boy, that was a big one for the O's. They win game 1 behind a Tomo Sugano masterclass. I am ready to admit that as a player I was wrong about. He is better than I thought he would be. I saw him in spring training. It looked like a pitching machine. He is good. He knows what he's doing.
He has been as good as Charlie Morton has been bad, right? Like all they got those two guys and Charlie Morton has gone as we have gotten like the worst possible outcome for Charlie Morton and the best possible outcome for Sugano.
Speaking of bad outcomes, Kyle Gibson started game 2 of the series. He got cranked. Game 3, Zach Eflin back off the IL for the Orioles. That's a big one. They win 7-3. Gunner doubling a homer in that one. Gunner's starting to heat up. That's very important for Baltimore.
Pittsburgh Pirates taking 2 out of 3 over the Braves. Bailey Falter, kind of gnarly on Friday. Bucks offense doing just enough. They win 3-2. Game 2, O'Neill Cruz leaves early. Don Kelly also leaves early as he gets ejected in his second career game as manager. Pirates go 2-for-18 with runners in scoring position as the Braves win 3-2 in 11 innings. Oy, Buccos, not great. But then on Sunday, obviously, you could predict this, Carmen Majinski outdueling Chris Sale because, of course, as the Pirates then walk it off against Raisel Iglesias, who continues to struggle, Paul Skeens is pitching against the Mets tonight. Is that correct?
I will be there. Skeens and Queens. The king of Skeens.
Love that. Love that. I will be watching that on television.
Astros, 2 out of 3 over the Reds. Hunter Brown keeps chucking it. 5 2/3 scoreless in game one as the Astros win. Reds bounce back for game two. They score 10 runs in the first inning off Lance McCullers Jr. There was a whole storyline where Lance McCullers Jr. received some very violent threats about him and his family. You people need to chill. Just actually, you know what? I take that back. Whoever made those terrible threats against Lance McCullers Jr. does not listen to this podcast. So I'm going to say those people
I hope not.
Need to chill. If that is you, if you do listen to this, unsubscribe.
We don't want you. Absolutely.
No bueno. None of this actually matters. Game three, Ronald Blanco punches out 11 in 8 shutout frames. So Astros take the rubber match.
The Rays taking 2 out of 3 over the Milwaukee Brewers as they win a very close one on Friday, taking down the mighty Jose Quintana. Eric Orzi, ever heard of him? He gets his second career save on Friday. And then Jackson Churio, who homers on Saturday. Churio kind of heating up a little bit, but they still lose because Travis Jankowski, who's apparently on the Rays now, hits a walk-off single to take the first two games for the Rays, but then the Brew Crew salvage on Sunday behind homers from Christian Yelich and William Contreras as they win 4-2. Milwaukee coming to Cleveland this week, so I will see a little bit of the Brew Crew. Big news for them is that Brandon Woodruff will be making his long-awaited return, not in Cleveland. It seems like it'll be at home this upcoming weekend in Milwaukee.
Funny moment, Brewers-related, that happened to me over the weekend at Citi Field. I was leaning up against the Cubs dugout railing. Ryan Flaherty, who is the Cubs, I believe he's the bench coach, and two other Cubs coaches were having a conversation. Flaherty points at me. He goes, "Hey, was Caleb Durbin good in college?" Caleb Durbin, who played at Wash U. I played at Wash U. And I just go, "Better than me?" He goes, "All right." Keeps talking. It was great. Go Brewers.
They knew you were the foremost Caleb Durbin correspondent. That's good.
They were clearly talking about Caleb Durbin, and there I was ready to give some obvious insight. Yankees 2 out of 3 over the A's in Sacktown. John Fisher, the owner of the A's, previewed this series for us last year when he was boasting about how he couldn't wait to watch Aaron Judge play in a small minor league ballpark, and that came to fruition. Judge homers twice in this one in game two in a game that the A's win. This was the perfect scenario for John Fisher. Awesome, yes. Judge game.
Dream
Yankees
sequence.
Lose. Like, this is everything he wanted. So big congrats to John Fisher. The rest of the weekend, less ideal as the Yankees pummel the A's in games 1 and 3. Game one, Jason Dominguez, 3 homers. We should talk about him later in the week. Game three, the Yankees give former teammate Luis Severino a wet willy and a swirly and obliterate him in a 12-2 victory. It's the 8th game of the year in which the Yankees score double-digit runs, tying the Cubs for the most in baseball.
One final series. Hey, Pope Leo, you listening? The White Sox
lock in,
win.
Lock in. Lock in, Pontiff.
3. Win 2 of 3 over the mighty Marlins, the fighting fish. Game one. Max Meyer. Come on, Max Meyer. I believe in you. He struggles again, sadly. Andrew Vaughn homers. Sox win 6-2 on Friday. Shane Smith. Has a Rule 5 pick ever made the All-Star team as a rookie? I'm starting to wonder because Shane Smith has the same ERA as Tarek Skubal, but that was not good enough for the Sox on Saturday as the bullpen is still very bad. The Marlins come back to win it 3-1. Rubber match on Sunday. Oh, baby. Oh, no. The White Sox, it's like, uh-oh, we got to face Sandy Alcantara. Well, sadly, Sandy Alcantara hasn't been very good this season. And Tim Elko, fresh off his major league debut on Saturday, hits a home run off of Sandy for his first major league hit as the Sox win 4-2. We are finishing with this one because we need to talk about Tim Elko for a few minutes before we say goodbye. This is one of the, so again, I imagine if you're just like online and you've been, maybe you know some White Sox fans, you might have seen this name pop up and be like, oh, this is like some prospect that White Sox fans really want to see in the big leagues because he keeps hitting home runs in AAA. Like, what's his deal? Why do we care about Tim Elko so much? Tim Elko has a statue. How many active major leaguers already have a statue? He might be the only one. I don't know what the likelihood of that is, but let us explain that to you now if you are unfamiliar, because Tim Elko played at the University of Mississippi, also known as Ole Miss, and Tim Elko is a legend in Oxford, Mississippi. And the reason for that is because in 2021, Tim Elko tore his ACL in the beginning of April, in the middle of his, I guess it was technically his senior season, his regular senior season, and somehow was back in the lineup like a month later, just hitting a bunch of home runs, limping around the bases. That team ends up winning. He hits two homers in the regional in Oxford to advance to the super regional. They end up losing in 2021. They lose in the super regional to Arizona. And then Tim Elko says, I'm coming back. Unfinished business. I'm not going to pro ball. I got to win a natty for the SIP. And that's exactly what he does. He comes back in 2022, is one of the best hitters in college baseball, hits like 24 homers. Ole Miss goes on this magical run. They win the College World Series. I believe it was it the first in program history? I don't know. But the point is, Tim Elko is a legend. He's a legend. He's like 23 years old at this point, and he's amazing. And it's like, in theory, it's like, okay, yeah, he'll probably go play pro ball because he'll get a chance. You know, someone will sign him as a senior. But like, most people were like, all right, well, that's kind of the grand finale of the Tim Elko story. Like, he'll go to pro ball, play a little bit, he'll get released, and then he'll just never have to buy a drink in Oxford ever again. And instead, not only does he get a statue, I think last year or 2 years later, to celebrate what he accomplished in Oxford, he just starts raking in the minors with the White Sox. He just is climbing his way up, and he reached AAA last year, but he's still striking out a bunch. And then this year, he really kind of improves some of the underlying stuff to where I was like, wait a minute, I know he's 26, but like, he might actually be kind of decent. And he just mashes and mashes and mashes. And finally, the White Sox call him up. And then, of course, in his first, or I guess in his second game, he hits a home run. And listen, I don't know where this is going from here. It doesn't really matter. Like, the Tim Elko story is already, you know, worthy of a book. But it's just great. It's a freaking awesome, awesome baseball story. And I'm glad we get to be talking about him here on this Major League Baseball podcast.
You asked before that beautiful story, had a Rule 5 pick ever made the All-Star team as a rookie? And I did some research. Don't look it up.
I have a guess.
It's one player. Who do you think it is?
Is it Roberto Clemente?
Not Roberto Clemente.
Oh, okay. Then I have no idea.
His name is Dan Ugla.
It's Dan Ugla. Oh, man. You know what's funny? When I was thinking about this last night, as I was thinking about Shane Smith, as I was falling asleep, I was like, oh, like Dan Ugla. Like, that's one of the most famous Rule 5 picks. And then Dan I was Ugla. Like, again, I guess I was too tired to like pick up my phone and like pull up his BREF page again. I was like, I don't even think Dan Ugla made very many All-Star games, even though he was hitting all those home runs. But that's awesome. That's so perfect. All right. Well, Shane Smith, here you go, man. Like, let's see if you can do this, because right now, I mean, it's not even really remotely close. I mean, he's like clearly the White Sox All-Star, and it's truly, there's not even anywhere remotely close to a competition. So we will see. That is great. And also just reminded me, like, we should have Dan Ugla on the podcast. So look at that. A little Monday Ugla. Yeah. What a great way to end the podcast. All right. We've probably gone longer than we need to. Shouts out to producer TJ Brassel for making this show possible. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Jake Mintz. And we will talk to you all on Wednesday. Bye-bye.